Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome back to the French Connections Part 2 on this Wednesday, the 12th day of April 2006. My name again is Daryl Bradford Smith, and as you know, this is the French Connection. The website is iamthewitness.com, and my email address, ladies and gentlemen, is iamthewitness@hotmail.com. I am pleased to invite for the first time to the French Connection Joan Vian. She is a researcher, a writer, an investment counselor, and an all around interesting person to speak to about these issues that we fight with every day, because she has been in the midst of the information for some time. She's been involved in United Nations research and many other things that we're going to discuss today. And because the maze of information is so thick, so complex, and so nonspecific when you're trying to find out where it all leads, it often doesn't get you to where you need to be. And Joan and I have been talking privately about a lot of issues today and then yesterday. And boy, is she having a great time waking up to some new stuff that we've been able to show her. And I'd like to welcome her to the show. Joan, are you with me?
I am.
Hey, Joan, you know, today's conversation, like the other day, I could hear the hunger in your voice for wanting to know more about this information that we've dug up. You know, I, too, went down different pathways in this information. In fact, early on, I was looking into the Jesuits and all this other stuff. And, of course, I'm sure there are bad Jesuits, but by and large, the Jesuit community is about 90 years old, and they're running around in walkers these days. Nobody's becoming a priest these days, so, you know, to think the Jesuits are taking over the world is nonsense in the extreme. However, you know, when you start having so much bombardment of information on the net, and you or through books and media, you start thinking, well, maybe it is this and maybe it is that. And I went down all of those paths and machinations until one day it finally dawned on me that the media, 90% controlled by a single group, the financing, the banks, all one group, 100%. Our largest PAC committees are controlling our Congress, 60-70% of the administration being from the same group. I started looking at the statistics, and then I heard Ben and others, and boy, did it all come together for me. And you know what? Since that day, I've looked at supporting documents that have made it clearer and more provable over time. What is your take on all this, Joan?
Well, from a personal standpoint, I have been coming into the knowledge of a world governmental structure for about 28 years. I first became acquainted with Carol Quigley's Tragedy and Hope. Since then, and that's a long time ago at this point, I went to different dimensions, meaning I believed radio and TV for a while. I then started asking God to show me truth and praying for it, and then a lot of the things that I'd been taught as a child, both from a religious experience with regard to Bible prophecy, just seemed to dissipate as I started finding more documents and other evidence that led me to other conclusions. In 1990, I read a book. I am a businesswoman, and I am an international reporter, a freelance reporter, which I have done for the last 12 years in the investment business for 25. And 12 and a half years ago, actually, in 1990, I read a book called Euroquake by Daniel Burstein. And in his book, he literally interviewed 3.5 or 5 pages of key leaders, everybody and anybody at that time. And he came up with 100 predictions for the 1990s. One of them was that the dollar, the Deutschmark, now the euro, and the yen would be equal to one by the end of the 1990s. And as I was reading that, I was shocked because he was talking and describing a global currency. You do not have global currency unless you have world government. So I started in 1990 asking God to reveal to me if there was a world governmental structure. In 1994, I went to my first United Nations conference in Cairo, which had to do with reducing the population of the world, an agenda called Sustainable Development, which comes out of a major document from the 1992 Rio Earth Summit called Agenda 21.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at that conference that I had what can only be called as a wake-up call, because I saw world government operating in action. I came home from that meeting pretty mad, upset, shocked, and with a suitcase full of material, which I started going through to find out how big, vast, broad, how far advanced was this global agenda of world government through the United Nations as an organizing mechanism. And I saw that at the next meeting, which was going to be held in 6 months, because in the early 1990s, like in the early 1970s, the United Nations held a series of mega conferences in which they put forward and forced major agendas for literally changing and reforming the whole entire world, mm-hmm. from the environment to women's rights to population to food to something called habitat, or where you live, which has to do with zoning and, again, property rights. So at the 1992 Rio Earth Summit with Agenda 21, they started foisting a very evil Orwellian agenda on the Earth. And so as I was going through that material and I saw that they were going to have a follow-up meeting 6 months from the time of Cairo, it is there that I saw that they were thinking of introducing for the first time on an unofficial level the idea of a global tax. Well, that started me covering global meetings. I have covered, I think, I have lost track, to be honest, at least 89 meetings over the last 12 years. I have been on every continent except Asia. I have interviewed two secretary generals, many, many key people throughout the whole United Nations infrastructure, academia, CEOs from multinational, transnational corporations, people from the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum, as well as key people throughout the Clinton administration, some from the Bush administration. I did ask George Bush. I did have an opportunity to ask him if the piece that he was talking about at a G8 meeting in Genoa was the New World Order, and that man would not respond to me. His face did not even flinch when I asked him that question.
He probably couldn't understand the English.
Oh, I think he understands quite well.
Well, I don't know.
I've had the opportunity to interview a lot of key people from the Bank for International Settlements, the International Organization of Security Commissions, the United Nations, the IMF, the World Bank, the G7, the G8.
Well, what was your conclusion before you started digging into what we've discovered? Where were you looking? I mean, I understand there's been a bit of an awakening here for you, because much of what you've learned fits in quite almost perfectly, imperfectly, with what we've discovered over time here. And the fact is, it's kind of, you were in the middle of the pack of the mess, and you were seeing the results of their actions, but not actually who was doing it. When did it dawn on you that there was actually a group of who much higher up that were actually running this agenda?
I don't know. That's a hard question, because, you know, we people are so naive. It's amazing the amount of naivete that we have. And unfortunately, I grew up in a time in which most of the media was being changed so that truth really is not truth, or it's partial truth, or it's sort of truth, or it might be truth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Somebody talked to me about world government. There were some tapes in the early 70s by some guy who was supposed to be part of the Illuminati, John Todd, his name was. And I got carried off with that for a little while, and then I dropped it. And then I started asking God to show me truth, and I ended up at this UN meeting. And since then, it's been 12 years, and I've covered, I don't want to say know the international level, but I'm very acquainted with many key aspects of the international level. Obviously, when people start looking at the United Nations, I had a call from someone this morning. And, you know, it's very interesting, the number of people in America, especially elected officials, who think the United Nations has no power. Well, all they have to do is go to the website and look at documents and agenda, which I've studied for 12 years, and that's not the case. The question is, and the question that I was looking for, and I thought I had it answered, excuse me, was who is the power behind the United Nations? I've written two books. The first one is called Prince Charles, the Sustainable Prince, because Prince Charles was in back of the agenda for sustainable development, which is very evil and draconian. And my first book, Prince Charles, the Sustainable Prince, the thesis is that it is the British royal family behind the power of the United Nations. Now, so far, in the 12 years, or actually about 8 years since I've written the book, I have not seen anything yet to make me change my mind. I am very aware that the British royal family has very close ties to the Rothschilds. I have seen a lot of what, and written about and reported on, a lot of what Prince Charles has done to foist this evil Orwellian agenda of control. With regard to other aspects, doesn't take a rocket scientist once you understand what the Federal Reserve is, that it's a private corporation, it controls the monetary system of the United States, that every country, with the exception of a few Muslim states, is controlled by a central bank, and that there are a small core group of international bankers that happen to be investors in all the central banks of the world.
Well, there's actually a single group, you're right, and they're behind the European Central Bank, which are the two big currencies in the world, of course, is the euro today, as well as the dollar. But we've even got the Manimbi and the yuan and the yen also controlled through a central banking structure that is controlled by these people as well. And as you so clearly pointed out, there is a single group behind them. And when you must have been shocked when your friend sent you the file on our stuff. Well, the most important one was Mr. Blair that we had on, Dr. Blair we had on yesterday. What was your reaction when you heard Dr. Blair speak?
It was life-changing, equal to when I went to the United Nations, because, you see, I have studied very much the central banking system of the Bank of England and, of course, the Federal Reserve, but I had not been, and I had studied since I was a young girl the British royal family. The Queens of England was, a favorite topic of mine when I was growing up. I didn't really know that I would become so closely entwined with their activities in my later years. Surprise, surprise. And so when I heard Dr. Blair and he talked about William III coming over, being controlled by the Rothschilds from Holland, the fact that the Jews were expelled from Spain because of usury and went to Holland, I have printed out from the Internet at least 3 to 4 inches of data and research, and I've ordered a couple books already on William III and Kings of England. And it was just, I'm like, how did I miss that? My goodness. Here I'm saying that the Bank of England was the primary central bank after the Swedish central bank, and I completely missed Holland and their central bank established in 1609. And I'm like, man, there's a real blackout here. Real blackout.
Mm-hmm.
Now...
So this revelation from Professor Blair, he's a doctor and a professor and a university professor, is one awakening. And as you know, we've got files from people like Professor David Pidcock and Professor Dickey, and we've got Professor McGowan. We've got a lot of people out there who've done more research on this. However, the one I want to bring you to now is of course a 1961 speech done at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C. by a man who spent his own life's fortune trying to fight back from things he did as a young man, as a first-person participant in the very conspiracy that you tried to learn about. And, his name is Benjamin Friedman. And you've just recently had the opportunity to listen to Benjamin Friedman. What was your reaction when you heard Ben?
Astounding. There are no words. When You see, let me back up before I can answer my response to Mr. Friedman. God bless his name and his heart and soul. We are all in the journey of life.
Mm-hmm.
We are all looking for truth. We are all determining to do good and not to be evil, to be kind to our fellow human beings. Unless you are terribly corrupt and evil and demonic.
And those people exist.
Yes. There's no way that you want to hurt, harm, rob, or cheat another human being.
Mm-hmm.
For the most of us, that is not in us.
And we can't understand how it could be in anyone else.
That's right. Now, I am in the investment field. And one of the things that I learned early on, because I earn my living through making a sale or making an investment, however you want to phrase it, is that it is very easy to deceive people and rape, rob, and pillage them by putting them in the wrong investment because it pays the highest commission, or by even investing money at a time that you personally might not think is wise to be in the market. And so I am very fortunate to have a husband who pays the mortgage. That doesn't mean we're filthy rich. We're not. We're hardworking people. But I have the ability that if I don't think it's the right time to make an investment, I don't do it. And if I so my point is that I learned early on how even our heart can work. The point, the fact that we're going to be talking about a group of very evil people who have been raping, robbing, and pillaging the world since the 15th century does not mean that that kind of evil does not exist in other people other than them. Because for the man or the woman who makes their living by cheating or using false pretenses to make a sale, to get ahead. In the investment field, it's called sales. And so, obviously, the person with the highest performance or production or income is the guy that you should look up to, when, in fact, that might be very incorrect because their heart might be as evil and dark and as black as the core group of people who run the monetary system of the world.
Well, so now, when you listened to Ben and you understood, because you already had come across the Balfour documents before,
I've known. I've known a lot of little things here and there.
Yeah. This man's account.
It was incredible.
Can you imagine for a moment, Joan, seeing the world at war and having trenches all over northern France and through the Somme, and the Germans and the French facing off with each other and the British there, and having a group of men come over and say, well, we're going to sneakily get America involved in this war through lies, through our media, through our influence, to come over here and extend a war beyond a date where the Germans said that they would give up if the French did. And basically, they extended two additional years, millions of more lives, 100,000 American lives, and then go on to hear how this man said that they manipulated Germany and bankrupted it through the 30s in order to get it to go to war. And then, if you don't know what Ben knows, we know more now, many of the leadership roles in the Nazi Party were actually held by Jewish leaders, and we've got proof on this. And so here's the interesting thing: the Jewish bankers backed the Nazis with their money. Max Warburg, and in fact, he lived through the entire war in Germany. And so here's the interesting thing: when you listen to Ben Friedman tell you that in the last century we had all this stuff, and then he talks about the Soviet Union and talks about the purges and all the different things, we can actually attribute millions of deaths to these people as though it were nothing. And, it stunned me when I heard it. In fact, it knocked me into the bed. I had to lay down for days just to get myself re-situated. I couldn't believe that all that I thought was real was a lie. And
yeah.
And now, 5-6 months later, I've got hundreds of corresponding documents that absolutely 100% prove that Ben Friedman told the honest-to-goodness truth.
This man is, you know, listening to it 40-some years later, 46, 45 years later, is incredible because back then he was warning about a third world war, war between Christians and Muslims, and here we are, especially when you take a look at what George Bush has done and is doing with Iraq and Iran. It is very scary. It is very scary. I was against and am against the war in Iraq, and certainly am against the war in Iran. It is just very scary to see how all the resources of the world are just up for grabs to whoever is the most venomous as far as going to get them.
Well, you know, there's other people who've come out and tried to expose them over the years, and many of them have been, you know, marginalized. And, of course, it's because we don't have a mainstream voice. And essentially, the only voice we've ever had was trying to convince your fellows that what you've come upon is real. Well, that changed in the 1990 year when we started developing what we now know today as the Internet. I think they saw it as a benefit to them until they realized that the freedom that it offered in information was actually a double-edged sword for these people. And today, more people than ever before are aware what Ben Friedman was talking about in the 60s is actually coming to pass. And there are much more going on here. But here's the thing I want you to talk about, maybe. There are people out there trying desperately to give you a taste of the truth, but to send you down the wrong road. So in other words, they'll give you 85%, but that very important 15% with the key piece of information that's going to tie it together for you is strangely omitted. And so you think, wow, these people are really on top of things, and wow, this is really the information, and all of a sudden you're still finding yourself at a dead end. And you know, nobody wants to talk about Ben except Eric, myself, and many other, you know, there's others, but wow, Joan, this Internet is something we all need desperately to keep free.
Well, you're absolutely right. You see, it's very interesting. When I first started to understand this information, I put together a briefing book back in 1994, and so it was very elementary as far as a lot of what I know today, but back then it was pretty major for me. And I asked God, who should I give this to? And he said, I want you to give it to every Christian leader that you know of. And so I began making that master list, and then who do I know who knows key individuals like D. James Kennedy or Charles Stanley or other people directly. And I sent out about 30 or 40 of these books, which were over 100 pages long, helping them, trying to help them understand world government. And to my shock, the only response I got was a letter from Gary Bauer, who at that time was in Washington, D.C. at the Family Research Council, who said to me, thank you very much, we'll put it in our research file. I was horrified. And then I started, there was a man I used to get his economic newsletter. His name is Don McElvaney, and I'm not afraid to say out loud that I think he is an evil man.
Mm-hmm.
And Don McElvaney, I saw him year after year. I'd read his newsletter. I would shake with fear. And one day I said, Lord, why am I shaking with fear? And, because, you know, then he'd close with a couple Bible verses. And then I realized, I said, Lord, he's one of yours. Why am I shaking with fear? And it took me a while, but I understood that God does not use fear. He uses love and power and a sound mind. And I realized he was a false prophet. And then I realized that so many things about him. And he sells gold and silver, and he has the highest prices in the whole entire industry if you ask other people in the market. And Don McElvaney says that he worked for the CIA infiltrating SDS units on college campuses. Hey, you know what? I think there's a whole lot of people who And, you know, and what was Don McIlvaney? My point is to all these people, whether it's Don McIlvaney or other people who were giving you, quote-unquote, Bible prophecy, is that, very simply, they were containment groups. And that is the phrase that I came up with all by my little self.
Mm-hmm.
I was so shocked that just when I thought we had an opportunity to hold back evil, that nobody, none of these people wanted anything to do with truth.
That's probably right.
Took my report and threw it into the circular file and said, nut. Okay? And so I saw that there is a tremendous amount of containment. Now, there's two types of containment. Containment done on purpose to conceal, and containment done because that person hasn't gotten to the whole truth and they haven't gotten to the next level.
You
moment.
Got it. We call them useful idiots.
Yeah,
that
well,
the people,
you know,
it's a term that Eric and I have developed because we say that when you've been duped by listening to the wrong people, you end up being a useful idiot to them, and not necessarily in the real world, real sense of idiot, but I mean, you're ignorant of the facts, and it's not necessarily intentional. It's more often you thinking that you're doing the right thing, and they are the most convincing of all people because they believe in what they're doing, and there's a sincerity to their efforts.
Oh yes, and it's like going to many of these UN meetings. I have to tell you that there are a lot of people that I've interviewed, a lot of people that I've talked to, who truly think they're doing something wonderful, heroic, and magnanimous for the people of the world, when, if the truth really be known, they're not. And they are in a serious way because they're being used like many, many, many of us have been. You know, it's up until we determine that we want to know truth, and I believe that the God who created the universe is the only person, source to give us truth.
Well, let's ask this big question then. Now that you've just arrived with Ben Friedman's work, and you did hear Imam Blair, and in fact, Imam Blair just did another show with us last night, an addendum to his previous work. There are other audio files on the site. I don't know how many of them you've had a chance to listen to, but they are all, in their own way, of equal importance because they all speak to different issues, and some of them actually confirm other issues. Where are you today with your growth here, Joan, and where are you moving toward now that you've come upon this set of facts?
It has confirmed that there is nothing new under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Who do we start with, Cain and Abel? Where do we start? With Satan deceiving Eve? Or even, you know, when you look at Abraham, he had two sons. One is now the Jewish race, the other one is the Muslim race. And I always say that Abraham's sons are still at war. And when you look at some of the things that the Muslims are doing versus the Jews, it's very interesting because the Jews use usury, but the Muslims don't. The Jews have perpetrated a goldless financial system in which they can expand the money supply at any given moment, thus creating inflation and making it harder for people to live and to have true value to their assets, whereas the Muslims have always used gold. So I find it very interesting that we have a kettle being painted black when it is the black sheep that are really black. And or it's sheep who purport themselves to be a certain kind of sheep.
Hmm. And who was the ones getting fleeced?
You and I.
You
betcha. The rest of the world that are outside their little scope.
But see, here the worst thing I know, in the name of righteousness, which is, this is how wrong that things can be. In the name of righteousness, they're declaring that America is marching toward the defeat of the Islamic world. And in fact, what we're doing is we're slaughtering the good sheep. we're destroying a group of people who, truthfully, 50 years ago, were living in harmony with their world. We're not at odds with the planet. What they did have was something that these venomous nasties wanted for their own, and they went in there and took it. And of course, now they're paying with their lives. And you and I are left to try to figure out, based upon what we can glean from our research, who the culprits are. Well, now we know who the culprits are. We know it's evil Jewish leadership. We know it's Zionism at its core. And we've been able to put a name and a face to these people. So what do we do now with this information, Joan? What do we do now that we've identified who they are and what they're doing and why they're doing it? What is it that we need to do next?
Well, that's a great question, because we're all asking it, aren't we? Those of us who have truth are asking, how do we get it out? How do we help people understand truth? And so you're doing what you're doing, I'm doing what I'm doing. It's a matter of expanding. It's a matter of expounding. It's a matter of trying to make it simple, if you can, so that others will want to listen. We were talking about a particular guest on your show who once you explained some things to her, said that there's no way she could come back on your program.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and that's a common response.
Yeah.
I had somebody just...
How sad is that, though?
Very sad.
Yeah.
Because I had somebody on another subject talking about Bush being evil, and this lady said to me at church, and we happened to be in the bookstore of our church where I was looking at some material to buy, and she said, you know, you were right. All these years that you were talking, you were right. Well, I'm like, excuse me, you mean to tell me for the last 12 years, as I reported on the global international level, you thought I was making it up and lying? Well, she was coming from the standpoint that she supports Israel, and they had somebody, she recently heard somebody talk about how evil Bush is, and that is because Bush believes in a Palestinian state. And
so she hasn't switched her allegiances at all?
Oh, no, she'll never be able to do that. She's too far gone. I mean, she wants to believe, and I'm like, what? And I said with a louder voice, Bush is evil. Bush is evil. Don't you get it? Bush is evil.
But he's not the architect of
bones.
But he's not the architect of any of this. He is only a mid-level manager. He's not even an upper-level manager of this.
That may be, but you see, how do you get people to understand truth? There's so much distortion out there. And so you ask...
Get them to the French Connections I Am the Witness site.
Yes,
that's how you do it.
That's exactly right. Get them to your website. That's exactly right. We're going to put a link on our website, and obviously it's going to be probably controversial to do that. But this is my point that I made to her when she said, don't yell. Don't yell. People will hear you. I got louder. I said, what? Bush is evil. I said, are you telling me that I cannot voice my opinion? I said, I'm not a politically correct person, because freedom is not politically correct. I mean, my point to her was, very simply, when you know truth, you have a responsibility.
Yeah.
And that responsibility is greater than anything else.
That's right. And you cannot be, once you have been turned into a pickle, you can never be a cucumber again. And the fact is, I'm a pickle, and I'm going to have to go out into my world, and I'm going to have to share this fact, this truth, until my last breath is taken from me, because to live in tyranny is unacceptable to me on every level of my life. And the fact is, these people want to enslave me, either through finances, through their control of food, of water, of transport, of freedom of movement, of gasoline, of everything you can possibly enunciate. And I can't live under that yoke. That yoke will not stand on me. And of course, when you put it in the stark terms, and then you place it beside the proof, it's up to every individual to be courageous enough to look. Now, we know people, by and large, are not very courageous, sadly. There are many out there who are, and so what we got to do is find out who they are and get them this stuff and say, take a look at it.
That's right. That is right. I mean, you know, there is, I am told, I'm not an expert in this, but there is a little phrase in the intelligence world that says, your friends are your enemies, and your enemies are your friends. And, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. There's a lot of truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
It has taken me, 28 years from the first time I heard about world government, and on and off, but in the last 12 years, you know, the things that I know, as you said, are mid-level. They're not on the highest level. When you plug in the Rothschilds and the Jewish banking cartel and King William III, you start getting a completely different picture of the inner workings of the entire world.
Yep.
And we were talking about a book. I mean, there's not a lot of books, but there's a few. And I was talking about this book called Lucifer's Children that talks about the Sabbateans and the Franks and the Oppenheimer.
The Khazarians and the Ashkenazis and the Frankists. Yes, yes.
That's right. And, you know, then somebody, gosh, probably about 10, 12 years ago, had me buy a copy of the Protocols of Zion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll be honest, I've never read it because I didn't think I could handle it. Okay? But I've been aware here and there. It's a matter of connecting. Now, I would like to ask you, even though you are the interviewer and I am the interviewee,
mm-hmm.
Where do you see, in light of your knowledge,
mm-hmm.
the United Nations and the agenda, the environmental agenda?
Well, the United Nations, in my view, is a vehicle for these people that they would either integrate or jettison based upon their needs. They either sign up to its auspices or they reject them in a timely fashion because both sides of the argument of the United Nations are controlled by them. What we found out, Eric and I, and many others, is that every side of every argument has these people in control.
Right.
And I'll give you an example. The anti-war movement and the war movement have been infiltrated in equal measure. The people who are trying to save the world through environmental change and the people who are against it are also from the same camp. The people in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are both bought off by these people. So the fact is, when you take a look at it, they're willing to morph themselves into whatever the political flow is at the moment. Now, how do they get that kind of control? If you start taking a look at how they set up these Masonic lodges across America under the New Bohemians, this happened back in the 1760s, 1750s, and it came at the behest of a guy named Wyckoff, who was looking into ways of trying to control the flow of information from very important people in the community. Well, come to find out, the Masons have representatives in both political parties. They have people involved in you'll find people that are Masons competing against each other in the global economy. In other words, you'll have people from Ford and General Motors trying to get the same customer, but when the day is done, they go to the same CFR meeting, which is one of their inventions, or they go to the round table in Britain as one of their inventions. And this was a brilliant stroke from these people. Now, here's the interesting thing. When they implode a country, Joan, let's say Russia, when they did it in 1917 to the Russian people, they went into Russia and spent an initial amount of money to take the country over. They wrote the book. Karl Marx was one of their own, and Engels was one of their own, and all of the different members of this warring factions were part of their team. 4,000 Jews went into Russia and took it over. They fleeced that country of 10 times what it cost them to take it over. So in other words, they turned their conquests into profit as well. So you think that they're spending money to get this stuff done for no reason, but the simple truth of the matter is that in the ultimate end, they end up making 10 times. And I'll give you another example in the American situation. Dov Zolkheim, the Controller General of the Pentagon, is responsible now for having stolen and shipping to Israel $2.6 trillion missing from the Pentagon's budget under his control. Now, this is a fact that was brought to bear at a news conference that no one to this day has spoken about, but the fact is they have been paid back tenfold for their efforts. So you might think that this is going in, how do they spend $60 billion or $100 billion to take over a nation? Well, they get back 10 times that when they end up winning their way. And the same thing is going to happen when they control Iran and they control Iraq's oil and they're in control of Saudi Arabia already. They're going to control the means of transportation. And, of course, you know it's them that has suppressed from the beginning new technologies that would have moved us away from fossil fuels. And they bought up the patents and they forced the world to use polluting technologies so that they would never lose control over you getting from your house to the grocery store and back. And these are facts of life that when you take a look at it rationally, you come up against an evil that you can't even fathom. Is that complex? How's that for an answer?
I'm tired already. Need to lay down. actually, as I have been analyzing this, I've had a light head. I've been overwhelmed. I've been it's been very heavy. It's another major level. Because it's not that I wasn't aware of their existence. I have been. I've read a few books. I've known some things. But it's a matter of how. How did it happen? How was it put together? I mean, when you look at... I'm putting together a major report on European royalty as it pertains to some of my writings and my research. And I was going through a bunch of my old royalty and majesty magazines. And there are several pictures of Princess Diana with one of the with Lord Rothschild from England.
Mm-hmm.
At different times, different places. Lord Rothschild with Princess Diana, and then of course when she was in New York before she went back to Europe and was killed, she received an award from Henry Kissinger and his group. And I thought, amazing. Just amazing, you know, once you open your eyes. I talked to a person who used to belong to MI5, and he told me years before I ever got into what I'm doing that Prince Philip was half Jewish.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all of a sudden you start looking at the world differently, and we are not talking the Jews of the Bible.
No.
We're talking a pseudo Jew, if
a converted know. Jew from the 7th century, 8th century Khazaria that was converted. Ashkenazism is a group of Gentiles that adopted Judaism. In fact, Muhammad Rafig will give you an Arthur Kessler on the 13th tribe. The whole book is on our website. You can read the entire book right on the website. You'll be floored by that information, but you're absolutely right. They're not even Semitic.
And so. What I have been trying to grasp, because look, you know, I can go outside of, I live out of my, I work out of my office, which is in my home. But if I go outside, I see the trees, I hear the birds, I smell the flowers. Okay, that is reality. Or is it? Okay? And so when, the biggest thing has been, how could this happen? How could we be at a point in time where the whole entire monetary system is controlled by the same people who control the media and what I hear? You know, the things that I would report back when I went to my UN meetings never made it to mainstream media. And they never will. And I remember saying to my mother, I would say, oh, this blah, 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 blah. And she'd go, are you sure? And I'm like, what's the problem, Mom? Well, I'm not hearing it on television. I'm like, Mom, you'll never hear it, but I'm your daughter, remember? I do not lie. And it took her a long time to finally determine that her daughter was telling the truth over the media. That was very shocking for my mother, because most people have come to truly believe with their very, very, very naive heart that what they're hearing on national television and radio is correct. Okay? And so Jesus, who I believe is the Messiah, was the Messiah, said that you will seek me and find me when you search for me with your whole heart. And that, and he, in John 14:6, he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. And so, if that is correct, then we have, all of a sudden, the formula for truth, seeking and searching with all your heart. How somebody can remain quiet once they know truth is beyond me. Does it take boldness and all these things? I would hope that truth is part of your metabolism, you know?
Well, but see, my experience is that most people, if they know that when they look at something, they're going to find the truth, and it's going to place them in a position where they have to do something, then they won't look in the first place.
Well, then they're not worthy of truth, are they?
Well, that's the majority these days. And, you know, they control our television sets. They've polluted our minds. And by the way, when you start looking into this, they're also the controllers of white slavery and trafficking of young women. They're also involved in the principles in every sense in the pornography industry in the world. And I have all the proof of that as well. They're also involved in child kidnappings across the country. I also have proof of that. So when you start looking at the level of evil, you're going to have a problem if you're not willing to look at hard sickness in its face. You have to be able to stare evil in the eye in order to defeat these people. And how many people are going to be able to do this? I don't say more than 10%, Joan, if we can get them to take a look.
Well, we don't need 10%. I mean, all you have to do is look at Gideon's army, you know, 300 as opposed to 60,000. I mean, you know, God does not use large numbers. He doesn't need large numbers, because then, as Gideon was wondering, they would think you did it and not me, says God. So it has been mind-boggling, which is, I can't even explain. I cannot even explain. It is
welcome
so
to the,
incredible.
Welcome to the real battle, Joan.
It is a real battle because, you know, Pontius Pilate said 2,000 years ago, when the Jews said, crucify him, we want Barabbas, he finally said, what is truth? There is not a more important phrase in the whole entire world that speaks about the crux of life, truth. Daryl, I want to thank you before our time is up, but you know, you have... for you only being, quote-unquote, in this battle for 15 months or so, or however long, you've done a phenomenal job of accumulating documents that, those speeches, those things, I don't know where you got them, but that's phenomenal.
I appreciate you saying that, and what I might suggest is when you do put IamTheWitness.com up there, put the file for Ben Friedman there and let people hear that, because Ben is really the seed. And he plants the seed. He is, in your parlance, he's the John the Baptist that foretells. And what you need to do is get people to listen, because he oozes sincerity in his presentation. There's just no way after listening to him that you can think that this man is telling you something untrue. And once the supporting documentation comes when you go to the site, you're converted if you're courageous enough to look. So yes, I do want to thank you too, Joan, for doing this. You know, you probably are going to, be looked upon with a little anger by some. But the fact is, the people who look upon you with anger are either going to be those, what we call useful idiots, or they're going to be the bad guys themselves. And trust me, there are a lot of them out there. They're being paid large sums of money to keep this information quiet. And we are working feverishly to make sure that they don't win at this. And I got to thank you for helping me today to do this. So it's been a pleasure for me to have you on the French Connection.
Well, thank you. God bless you and your family.
Thanks, and Joan. You too. Bye-bye now.
Bye now.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Joan Vion. And, you know, she's just coming to awakening to some of the research that we've uncovered here. Please don't discount the things we say. And when you read, you know, that I'm this Comtel pro and all this other stuff, understand initially and then directly that this is all about trying to stop you from understanding who's really trying to do you in, and that's a fact. Anyway, until the next installment of The French Connection, I want to thank you all for being my guest, and I will talk to you soon. Be well. Bye-bye.